were complaining about people, terrorists calling up his father saying, I killed 10 Jews. And we're like, we don't want to curse or offend anybody.
The flag was hoisted before the world.
What does it mean, fight back? We have a long fight ahead of us.
Here I am.
Here I am.
Here we are.
Here I am.
Here I am with Shai Davidai.
My next guest is a rapper, comedian, is on a TV show on MTV, a persona of himself. I don't even know how to describe you. So here I am with Rami Matan Evanesh, a.k.a. Kosha Dills.
Thank you. Yes, here I am.
Thank you for it. Thank you for coming, Kosha. I'm going to start with the same question that I start every episode, but with you, it's going to be a little bit different. So, Rami, what kind of a Jew are you?
What kind of a Jew am I? Oh, man, what a good question. I'd say, in the words of my buddy Eitan, I'm that Jew. I'm the most... To many people, I'm the most Jewish. To many people, but to all my friends, I feel like I'm the least Jewish, you know? But
what is that? Like, who?
I guess a lot of my stuff is about pride, you know? Pride in being my identity. I didn't really like, at a specific short period of my life, I feel like maybe from my developing years at like 17 to like 21, 22, I really didn't like the whole Jewish aspect, but I was really proud that I'm, you know, from an Israeli background and Israeli. And I think that was really hard to fit into America because America's like, are you Reform? Are you conservative? Are you Orthodox? And I'm like, I don't know. My parents are Israeli. Like, we don't need to do anything. You know what I mean? Like, we don't, yeah. I don't got to do anything.
Yeah, I don't fall into any of those categories either.
Yeah. You know? And when we decided that, you know, I would take the name Kosha Dills, it was sort of like, you know, Rami is it's ambiguous. You don't know. If you hear a name Rami, you could think I'm from Lebanon, Palestinian, Egypt, Jordan, and Kosha Dills is like, oh, that Jewish, you know? Yeah. And I kind of did that to be like, you know what? I don't want to deal with any of these weird questions in my head and feeling unbeknownst to what I am. So let me just give it to you. And then I don't have to deal with that anymore.
So, yeah, but like you didn't always go by Kosha Dills. Right, mm-hmm. I read that you went by KD Flow.
Yeah, KD Flow. I changed it when I was 17. I was Kosher Dill, then I became KD Flow. When I got sober and I came out and put out my first record on, it was my own record label, Matzah for Your Mouth Records. And it was a matzah ball eating a matzah ball. I mean, there's images of it on the internet. It's pretty epic. And that was it. I was like Kosher Dills, you know? Change the ER to an A and change the S to a Z. And I'm like, now we got something cooking.
What was it? What was it like when you were KD Flow? Did it feel like you were a different person?
Yeah. I was super street, you know, I was definitely in my addict phase.
What does that mean?
I was selling drugs, doing drugs. Was in college. It was just like KD. There was a lot of names at that time in hip hop. There was MF Doom. There was this guy Pac FM. It was MF Grimm. So I was like KD Flow. Dun dun dun.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And I was going to rap battles and open mics, and that was really my stage time, you know? Doing a song as a guest of a thing that was, you know, a showcase. And at that time, people weren't really doing shows. When, you know, I didn't really have much songs. We didn't really have access to studios. And then when I became Kosha Dills, that was full steam ahead in this new... And then that's really when the Jewish... was the least Jewish I was at that time, I felt like, and compared to where my identity is now. But the amount of people that found it that were from this, you know, would reach out to me, and it was a really cool thing.
So wait, so and you know, not everyone's seeing this. So can I see your bling? So I'll describe it to people listening. And so you got this huge like goal that says Kosha.
You got the dog tag.
Yeah, with the Magen David. You got another dog tag there. Another Magen David. What else do you have there?
In Israel with a sapphire, like, you know.
The map of Israel.
Yeah, with another Magen David on the side of that
necklace. You got a pin of the Israel flag, but with the colors.
Trans lives.
Mm-hmm. With Israel flag, right?
I got that on a Greek Jewish festival shirt. Yeah.
Like, you walk now anywhere and like, it's like, it's you're undeniably Jewish, right? Yeah. Like you're not, you don't have a yarmulke on, but you do have a cap on, you know, you don't have a beard, but you're undeniably Jewish. But yeah. When you were KD Flo, did the audience know you're Jewish? Did you rap about being Jewish?
I don't think, you know, it was, but I was like, I think I had a song, like this is like in my earlier times of, and by this time I was already Kosher Dills, but when I was KD Flo, no, like, I don't think people just, your job was just, you know, berate the next person. So I was ripping them up for, but I was really intrigued with like Jewish gangsters and like, Goodfellas was like my movie and Sopranos. And I wanted to be like the Jewish guy in like all the Italian movies, basically. Yeah, that was my real connection to it, being like, there's always that one Jewish guy in the film that was like cheating on his wife with like an Italian woman. I don't know, something like that. And I was like, I want to be that guy. I want to be like a big piece of shit, you know? Like just.
Well, you want to be that, you know, that's the kind of thing like everyone.
But it represented some sort of tough Jewish gangster. And like, that's what I was watching. I'm like, oh, I could relate to that guy. You know,
so if you can relate to that guy, you can't relate to the Nebuchadnezzar Jewish characters.
Yeah, because we come from like fighting and military, like everyone in my family has been in the military. And then like I wasn't, cause I went to jail and, you know, multiple times. And then like, I just remember that my brother, when he was in the military, I mean, he was, you know, just seeing him come back from military and like having black and blue toenails from doing the 50 kilometer and 100 kilometer hikes. And
when you say military, US military or
Israeli. And then like, you know, then he went to the US also in his Marine. And you know, my grandfather was in the Polish and then the Russian and then the Israeli, and my father was in this war and that war. My mother was in the military, you know, so you just sort of like fighters, you know, our family is more like, and we all wrestled, we all did contact sports while everyone went to all these other kids in America, like they all went to like these Jewish camps. I had no clue what they were until I got older, and it's like they go and they sing and I don't know, like that it was odd to me. I just had a discussion about this. It's like there was a huge thing everyone else like now stresses like activism and togetherness, and like our family was like stressed on athleticism and being strong. Like that's really what we did.
You know? You still are. Like you just told me, but
that's it. I'm doing like a
marathon,
seventh marathon. My brother owns a strength training gym. He was Mr. Israel, Zach Tzachi, or Zach. He does underground strength coach, and he was like one of the first guys lifting tires and doing all that sort of strength training stuff for young athletes and like from wrestling, baseball, football. And he teaches in Jersey. My other brother, who was in the military, he lives in Florida and teaches people, you know, how to shoot guns, you know, Orthodox Jews, how to, you know, secure the perimeter, like unarmed response to active shooters. If you do, you know, want to learn how to shoot, that's what he like focuses on. And, you know, the Krav Maga has become sort of this thing like, oh, let's just do a Krav Maga class on Shabbat or something like that. And it's just like, sort of cringe. And my brother's like, well, you know, they're training, you know, for the day that kind of comes. And my other brother's always been training, you know.
It's crazy that you would need to even train a community to do something like that. And everyone who's like heard me speak, has been listening to the podcast, knows that I'm all for nonviolence. I'm all peace. But that doesn't mean submissiveness. Like, you know, you need to be prepared, but if you need to defend yourself.
Well, you should. I think there's... When I did some shooting with my brother in Florida, and like I don't like guns, but I you know, I was like, oh, I see how this builds confidence of people, like knowing how to use something in case it happens. That makes you feel confident, like when someone comes up to you and attacks you. But yes, that's right. We're the only community that sort of prepares for this.
Yeah,
you know, there's no like armed training for the LGBTQ community. There's no armed training for the Mexican community. There's no armed training for, hey, I mean, maybe there is, but I'm unbeknownst to it. Like this is specifically for
the community that has like its own private like guards for synagogues, schools, like, you know, everywhere around the world. Like,
right.
Like Colombia students organize their own like WhatsApp group called Hashomrim, like the
Shomrim of Colombia.
The Shomrim of Colombia, like the safeguards or whatever, the watchmen, right? Where it's like, if you're a Jewish kid and you're afraid to go from step A, you know, point A to point B on campus, you text them and someone some other Jewish kid comes and walks with you. Mm-hmm. And I think that really is changing the story of the Jewish people, because, you know, like, they love to see us as like these like weak kind of, you know,
they just had that on Toronto. And it's like in Toronto University in Canada, I saw that they have people and they call them vigilantes, like armed defense men. And they're like, no, we're just walking kids to class because they feel unsafe. And they're like, yeah, they're like shielded up with like bulletproof vests and stuff. And it looks intimidating. And I guess that's the purpose. That's the point.
Vigilante is someone who takes the law to their own hands. They are not vigilantes. They are filling a gap where the law doesn't happen.
Right. Exactly. Maybe I would say it would be really interesting to know who, like, for mosques around America or, you know, black churches in the South, do they have their own security forces? And I think it makes people feel more comfortable also knowing that there's someone in the like security perimeter that they may know from the community. And usually we know who's in the showroom anyway, because we interact with them.
But, you know, the important thing I think is that no group should have this.
Right.
No group should need to learn Krav Maga, shooting, you know, what to do, like, under no.
They should learn it for other reasons.
Yeah, just for
further fact that you want to learn it and build for the zombie apocalypse.
Not for the anti-Semitic apocalypse.
Exactly.
But tell me about your journey, because you went. I mean, I know a little bit about you, and you know, you are more of a Shomer Mitzvot now than you were like 20 years ago, right?
Yeah,
like,
of course.
I've seen you with a yarmulke, and I've seen you like, what was that journey? Like, why were you moving away from it?
I like to be Jewish. I like to be Jewish in places where there aren't no Jews, you know? I think that's like really a cool experience for people to have, you know? Being Jewish in a world of tons of Jews, it's cool, but to really experience what it's like to be Jewish where there are none is like really, that gets to the core of what we've all learned for our entire being. Like, we've all learned like, oh my God, they hated us and we were the only ones there and no one helped us. And it's like, no, there are so many places where there are no Jews, you know, and still people do not have any interactions with Jewish people. Just a short overview of like who I am.
Wait, before we get to the overview, because I want to ask you about where was the craziest place you've been Jewish where there are no Jews?
I know this is going to sound really insane, but I would say like Alaska and Poland. One, Alaska, I remember the guy being like, oh, you're like the Jew guy. And this was like 2008 when I went up to do a show and he was from an indigenous tribe. And at that moment I was like, oh, this guy doesn't even know if a certain thing could be offensive or not. You know what I mean? I'm just like, yeah, it's me, you know? And
You can't blame someone.
No,
for not
exactly.
Knowing.
You can't. And just, I think
you blame them when they do know and they keep saying it.
That's a good point. And people all have good inside them, I think. So, you know, it's a cool opportunity for me to be the person that they meet. There are 14 Jewish festivals operating within Poland that are Jewish curated festivals. Some are curated by Jews, some are curated by non-Jews, and usually about 90% of the audience are non-Jewish and 10% are Jews. Like, wow, this is this Jewish festival. In Poland, I was at the Warsaw Singer Festival and Modest Yahoo was playing there. It was right after he was attacked in Rotterdam Reggae Splash Festival in Spain. This was in 2015 and he went viral because they asked him to make a statement against Israel and he's like, I'm from New York. And then the whole world, it went back and forth. They uninvited him from the fest and they invited him back. It was really crazy. And then he played at this festival, and this is when I went to Auschwitz for the first time with my family. So we were in Warsaw, got to head to Krakow, and I saw Modest and saw this festival and so many people in the streets, beautiful. And there were two people who had like an Amish beard and it was odd. And I'm like, why? This person was dressed up as an Orthodox Jew and people dress up as Jews at this festival. And they also sell figurines.
Non-Jews dress up as Jews?
Yeah.
What? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's the thing. It's like, I wouldn't say it's common for everyone to do that, but that was just a thing.
Acceptable.
Of like, it was like a celebrating according to them, you know, and it's like an obsession with Jews. Because you understand, death is the number one seller of tourism in Poland. I mean, everyone goes on like their heritage trips And then you have the Salt Caves as like a UNESCO site. And, you know, once something becomes a UNESCO site, you'll start having other groups of immigrants coming in, not immigrants, like just tourists, you know, a lot of Asian tourists going and hitting, they hit all the UNESCO sites. And they have the Salt Caves, they have concentration camps, obviously, so people head to Auschwitz. And when I was there and seeing it, and then I started buying like little things from the store. I mean, they had Nazi swastika memorabilia. They had little figurines of old Jews who looks, you know, with money and stuff like that. And that's sort of what people assumed that Jews looked like. And if you have the old pictures, I mean, that's what they're basing it off of. But that's become like a tourist attraction. So on one point, you have something that sounds absurd in Alaska. And another point, you have something that's extremely close to home where people are sort of numbing the pain of like the reality that they live in. And Polish people are sometimes like, ugh, all right, enough, another Holocaust trip. You know what I'm saying? Because everyone, it's like Hollywood Boulevard for them, you know? And the Hollywood Boulevard effect is like, it's right here, so you don't care about it, right? Because, and then people come from all over the world to see the stars. And that's sort of what's happening in these places where they celebrate. They have 20,000 people at the Jewish Culture Festival in Krakow. And, you know, a lot of the, most of the people aren't Jewish.
That's well,
you know,
at least we're having some festival.
Yeah. And it's just,
I mean, it's what kind of, so tell me about the overview. So from point A to point B.
You know, I started rapping in late 90s. I'm 43. So it was like 99, 98. I was in high school entering rap battles. My best friend was Iranian. He was really great rapper. And I was just like wanted to fit in with him, and he was doing these battles. So I started entering the battle scene of New York, and it was sort of like 8 Mile at that time. You could smoke inside, and it was just, you know, really like, you know, chaotic. There wasn't really, some people had VHS cameras, but there was no cameras really. And, you know, I had gone to jail a few times. Mainly one was in like 2001 or 2002, and then going off, you know, on bail for a year, and then going to sentencing, and then in between that year really barely rapping at all, and just everything was really about drugs and just drug addiction and some drinking and selling drugs and anything. Everything was about that at that point. I was on a wrestling team till my sophomore year. Junior year, didn't get back on the team. I was completely like full-blown drug addict like every day. And it's kind of hard for people to sort of like imagine like what it's like. And that's like at that time in my life, it was like, you know, this guy's going to do an armed robbery. Sure. Yeah, let's go. This person, is it stealing a car if you're just driving it or not? You know, just taking the keys or in it. Like I was doing stuff that was crazy to some people, but if you put yourself next to a bunch of other crazy people, it was like, oh, I did, you know, you were getting one upped in jail. And I was in a mentality of like, oh man, I like wanted to do more time. I felt like qualifying in this area of the world. And by the last time I got out, it was 2004. I got sober and I was set up in like a sting operation. Then I got sober and then my life started to drastically change of like, okay, you know, I'm in jail again for the last time. I'm trying to stay out of prison. I'm going to get sober by any means necessary and do halfway houses and 3/4 houses. And I ended up not going to prison, even though the first time I did go and did parole, et cetera. And that was it. I was just done. 2004 to 2024 is me sort of just integrating back into society, staying sober, staying out of jail, figuring out rap, figuring out how to become a productive member of society. Worked at a rehab that I went to, doing odd jobs, delivering pizza, and rapping along the way and making music in New Jersey. And in 2011, I moved to LA. And 2012, I won a big rap battle, maybe in like 09, you know, these win a record deal, you know, you're playing Hot 97 Giant Stadium and just getting that competitive spirit back from wrestling, I think. But 2012, I had a Super Bowl commercial, and that really kind of really cemented me into the music industry.
But all of this is still like you're called Kosha Dills, but you are rapping about love, about friends, about
whatever.
You're not really talking about anything deeply Jewish back
no,
then.
No, I wouldn't say deeply Jewish, but like, you know, I would go to yeshiva programs. I think in the early 2000s, I was like, oh, you want to go to Israel for 4 weeks for like $100 and like studying some yeshiva with Aish? And you're like, yeah, I'll leave anywhere for $100. Like, that's what I have. And like, you should make a song about this and include this. And I just, at that time, we were like uploading songs to MySpace and doing like very like Jewish oriented things. But at one point in 2008, which this will be like a really unique point to hit, there was the Bernie Madoff time when he was like, there, yeah, all these people were donating to Jewish causes and then he like robbed everybody. Yeah. I did like a whole Israel tour. I think it was Israel at 60. And me and one of the guys from like a Wu-Tang affiliate and another rapper named Shy360, we all went to the Bay Area. And that was the first time I really got put up against like on Yom HaTzma'ot holidays, and it was huge Palestinian flags on campus. And you're like, there was beef and fights and like sort of like what you see now. But this was 15 years ago. Went to UC Berkeley, went to all these places. And that was the first time I was really like doing these Jewish events. But there was a new Jewish music scene after Modest Yahoo came out, because Modest Yahoo made it. He was, you gotta understand, like all of a sudden, like Jews in music now, he was like this new thing. So I was coming from a hip hop background, but then this like whole essence of music and happiness and love, that really came from like the what I call the Modest Yahoo era, where I started rapping with people that weren't rappers, like rappers, you know? And I really came from rap, like underground hip hop, like what you see with the guy in a hoodie and a book bag and ciphers and rap battles. But the Jewish thing really sort of broadened it all, because I feel like everyone was going through like a morph of their Jewishness as time went on, and they had conflicts like 2006 and the introduction to social media, 2012, 2014. And then we started, you know, we grew into our Jewishness as social media grew. It was a really odd situation.
So when you say we, it's like, it's very like
the community of other, community like of this and, community of rappers and Jewishness. And like, there
who
was
would be
really,
other people for people to Google.
My buddy Erez Safar, he like started this thing called Shem Speed. There was a guy named Wylov. He was like the first Black Orthodox Jewish gay person. You know, I think like that he was like a guy that was like playing at, there was like, you know, Jewish activities
Orthodox,
and
Jewish. Gay,
and
rapper.
Yep. Yeah. And he was rapping in like Aramaic and Yiddish, and they were just people that were just dipping and dabbing.
Nassim Black,
I knew Nassim before he was Jewish. I rapped with Nassim from the Seattle scene. This was like Macklemore, Nassim. There was this budding Seattle scene, which I was really keen to, because they were just top notch as far as aesthetics of like artists. Like, they were the first people to invest in their music videos, yeah. You know, like you're like, whoa. But to jump it all forward, this grew. Instagram happened, more happened. I became a Billboard charting artist 2016, 2020. I did, you know, another album during the pandemic, and I lived in Israel a short time. And I moved to New York in 2020, the summer. I started doing like viral antics on the street of New York. And that was in 2020. And that was like the first time I went viral. And it sort of grew this viral rapping. And as, like I said, as social media grew, the Jewish content sphere was just developing to where it is today, where there's like, you know, magazines, yeah, and young kids and trying to make it cool. And we've been trying to make Jewish stuff cool, I think, since like 2008. And it's kind of like an impossible task.
But now you got to Well, you know what? When I was growing up, 1990s in Israel, there was this thing like, you can't rap in Hebrew. It was just a thing. It was like, there was Shabak Samech.
Yeah.
They were like, okay. So they were like kind of rap, but kind of like cutesy for teeny bopper rap.
Mm-hmm.
And then for years, there was nothing. And in the previous few years, you've got more and more, you know, like rappers in Hebrew. But I think we've been going through the same thing. Like, there was like, you can't really do anything cool in
Subliminal
Hebrew.
Was like the cool Subliminal, guy. Yeah, Subliminal is cool. But even Subliminal, you know, and then even they get old, right? And now there's like young rappers. I mean, I follow this kid, Dor Shalosh. She's really great. There's this guy, Pele. There's this band I toured with called Lucille Crew. I mean, the Israeli music scene, and they have Indie Negev is like probably the hippest indie thing out. And now there's just Jewish artists all over the world now are getting protested. Yeah. So now we're all like sort of finding each other in these like in interesting pockets. And that goes from Modest Yahoo still getting protested once again, even though I remember when he was... when it first happened, it was like the shot heard around the world. And that's sort of been like a situation for me, just on a smaller level. and getting to work with someone like him. But then now where we're at now, like it's like the meeting of content with art and activism and rap and rock and all these people meeting each other.
Which is kind of like going back to where hip hop started, right? Hip hop didn't start just as like, we're going to do some cool stuff. It was started like, hey, like we're claiming a space for us, you know, up in the Bronx, up in Brooklyn, like we're going to be ourselves. If they don't let us into their, you know, I'm talking about like mostly African Americans, like if they don't let us into their FM radio, we're going to do our own stuff.
Right.
Right. So
I think what I'd say, if I got anything wrong in the 20 years of me doing music so far, it was me like, oh, let me warm up for Wu-Tang. Which is a sick thing. But like Wu-Tang has their own like diehard fan base forever. And the reality is like, once you start doing your own thing and realize the value of what you do is so unique, then now you're just going out by yourself and you're like, okay, how many people are here in this town? All right, there's 30 people here. Okay, well, we're going to come back and hopefully there'll be 100. And now if there's 100, there's going to be 150 and your message spreads. And just similar to you, it's like you're out and you're speaking and a lot of people are gravitating towards it. And this is what I'm doing since last spring. It's like, I'm just going out there and seeing what, like I've seen the videos grow and I'm like, oh, who wants to see me? Because in reality is, I never really wanted to fall into any of this. I just really always started out just wanting to rap and do shows and sort of just play my shit. But now it's becoming different. People want to meet you for different reasons, and that's cool too.
Yeah, I mean, you. I always say like, I've always been Jewish. Like, you can't take away my Jewishness. It's always been me, but it's been private. October 7th made it public. Mm-hmm. Like they were like, hey, you are a Jew. Why? Yeah. Because you believe Israel has a right to exist. You're a Jew. And the moment they said that, I had a choice. I was like, okay, like, no, I'm not. It was like, yeah, I am. So I was like, just lean into it. So I got this Magen David. I was like, you know what? I'm going to come and say I'm a Jew. Mm-hmm. Right? But let's talk about the music scene. Like, what's it like? Because you mentioned Matisyahu being protested, but also like people canceling his shows because of security reasons, because the staff doesn't want to work. What's it like being in the music scene, in the hip-hop scene for you, forever Jews right now?
I was just thinking about that on the way here. On October 7th, I was playing a hip-hop festival. It was called the Happiness of Pursuit Festival. It's like my boy 60 East makes it, and he's like an underground hip-hop festival in California. And I just remember everything unfolding that day, me screaming, like I'm on the phone with my mom, and then her friend's granddaughter got kidnapped. And it was just like, I was like, damn, it's like, we're all sort of connected. And I was like, I was trying to figure out if we were connected to it or this was just like, you know, something you hear in the background. Cause at this point there's like 50 people, 100, it just, the numbers kept going up. And that was the moment where I like that day I just played my show and all day it was Shabbat and I don't post on Shabbat. I was like, that's my thing. And I'm like, I'm going to have to say something. And I remember some guy, you know, and I'm not going to even say his name, but like, he's just very political artist. And he's a really a lot bigger than me. And I've known him for like 20 plus years. And I'm like, of course he's good. I remember, should I get mad if someone's going to yell Free Palestine or not? But I just understand who he is as a political artist. And that's just what he does. Whether there's no Jews killed or 1,200 Jews killed or 20,000, he's going to say this because that's like his brand, you know? Yeah. He wouldn't be able to get up there and say, it's really sad. You know, this is not his thing. And I just kind of accepted it. I'm like, all right, before October 7th, I was going through a massive change as far as like my personal life. And I wrote like 40 songs as Rami, and they were all love songs and relationship stuff and breakup stuff. And I'm like, you know what? It's big fucking Jew time. Put the Kosher Dills hat and like, let's go fuck shit up. And like, let's
fucking Jew time. I love that. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it is. And it is big fucking Jew time. And it's always big fucking Jew time for me. And it's always big. What really I'm saying is it's always big me time. And it's like, if you got something wrong to say about all of this, the reality is you don't. Because anyone that's ever really spoken on it to me, and I mean in conflict, usually has never approached me. It's always online. And I'm like, you know what I'm going to do? I did every other last conflict. And literally, if you ask every other conflict that's ever happened, anytime Jews have been attacked, I'm always doing a response, a song, a video. And I was looking back in my history, you know, when Facebook pops up and I'm like, oh, They killed three Jews in a supermarket in Jersey City. Oh, I did something then. They attacked us in 2014. Okay, I did something with like rapping over like a tank drum, and my buddy Erez, and I remember Mata shared it. These are even the first album I did was a Black Jewish collaboration that was built on like that, like dedicated some of the proceeds, which we didn't make any, but we were like, we'll give it to this charity. And it was just like, I was always interested in figuring out to address some sort of issue. But a big part that attracted me to it was that anytime I said the word Jerusalem or Israel, people lost their mind on the internet. It was like, I could just say, dun, 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 ah, you know, oompty doopty loopty doopty Israel. Ah, it's just like, you know, and people, you're like, you know, watch. It's almost like you're like, hey, kids, watch this. And it would be like a magic trick. Like, you want to see a bunch of pigeons flock to the one piece of bread? Just say the word Israel randomly and everyone would go crazy because it's been demonized. And I thought, how could you transfer that into the art? Because it is such an interesting thing, if you think. What other word exists? There's not that many other words that have been demonized, you know, in certain communities and all over the world. You know, you say Israel, Russia, it sounds like worse than Ukraine, China. Get all these like taboo things, and you're like, Rami, I grew up, my whole world around me is Israel, because
right? You have family in Kiryat Tivon.
Yeah,
that's like not even like saying I have family in Tel Aviv or Jerusalem. You have family in Kiryat Tivon. Like, you have family in Israel.
Yeah, and my family, other families in Nahariya, and it's just like it's normal for us.
For people that don't know, Nahariya is like one of the most northern cities in Israel. It's like been bombed. Yes. Multiple times in the past 11 months, people have been hurt. Some people have been killed.
The thing to go to Nahariya and it just, you know, when your Facebook updates from your like family is like, it's just not normal for people to be like, oh yeah, like, we have a bomb shelter and that we have a mamad and we have a safe room. And like, no one else's family experiences except Israelis and Palestinians. And Palestinians don't have the privilege of having a mamad because no one's built for them,
because we're building terror tunnels.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I just, if you take a step back from all that, you're like, how do I just incorporate this into what I'm doing? And I did it in 2021, but it was 11 days. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I went to all the protests. I remember a guy being like, march with us. And I was at a Grand Central Station Palestine rally. And I noticed the first time I filmed something. And this is when Instagram Live was, and I noticed that there was like 40 more people than usual in my Instagram Lives at this thing. And I was like, this is interesting. Why does everyone want to watch this? I've been going to these rallies and Israel parades since 2007, performing on the float. I mean, it's like something I've done every year consistently. And I don't know. I just feel like it's all advanced now because of the internet. So
it's the internet.
Everyone has been encouraged. Well,
I think it's also, you know, people need the fighters, people need the advocates, people need the lawyers, people need the artists. Like, they it can't all be just like we're fighting. Like, it has to be the singing, the singing, not just for fun, but for like, here's something meaningful. Like, you look at the civil rights movements in 1960s for African American civil rights. Like, it's not just like somber, you know, speeches. It's also singing together. You got the folk singers coming down singing, you know, you got all that as well. It's part of a movement.
I thought about Leonard Cohen going to Egypt during the Yom Kippur War. This is like what I was like, okay, I could get behind this. Like, what's my place in this thing? Am I gonna like go to Israel and be like, right, I'm baking for soldiers, or I'm cooking, or I'm boxing up shit, or am I gonna raise money and
I've seen you play for IDF soldiers.
Yeah. And I'm like, this is what I want to do. I'm like, I want to do a Leonard Cohen thing, because Leonard Cohen's a legend, you know, and he wrote Hallelujah. And if you think about Jewish songwriters, I mean, Jewish songwriters wrote songs about everything else except being Jewish. They wrote a lot of Christmas songs, you know what I mean? Like, we're just like sort of, we're in it because we love it, you know? I mean, for me, like, music is my soul, like, makes me breathe, you know? Comedy is my soul, it makes me breathe. And like, when I'm a Wild and Out, I'm like the guy with the yarmulke, but I'm not yarmulke because I'm religious. I also like, I want to make people say, wait a second. Oh, there's a Jew. Because if you look at this, no one knows what this is unless they're Jewish people. Other people are like, what is that? They don't know. Yeah. They don't know this is from the Bar Kokhba revolt or, you know, these yeah. the coins.
They don't know what the Bar Kokhba revolt
yeah,
is.
Yeah, they don't know. They don't. I wore this and people think. Some
this,
people,
what is this?
This is the Israel.
The flag. Israel.
But
flag,
other
yeah.
was like, oh, someone thought it was Palestine. You know, say like whatever you want. But this is not everyone knows. So you go on to a show that's, you know, the largest show for the Black community, and it's 20 seasons. You know what I'm saying? This is like, it's been
what,
a monumental.
MTV,
yeah. Yeah. MTV, BET, VH1. It's, you know, Viacom, it's the whole thing. Yeah. But it's a big honor to be like, just to bring diversity to that show, because that show's known for being diverse and it's had legends, Cat Williams, Pete Davidson, Kevin Hart. And you're just in a room and it's like, I don't know. I just felt comfort knowing that. And like, I also don't want to be just known for that. But it is something I also do want to be known for too. And it's sort of yeah. like the,
So yeah. And then you have these songs, that are very Jewish about, you have a song called Schmoozing. It's, you know, about,
I just wrote one. Yeah.
You have that song that you sample Adam Sandler's epic
Hanukkah song. That
you
was my
Hanukkah
biggest song.
2.0. Uh-huh. You got a song about the Passover in the subway. So you got all those, which is like Jewish identity, Jewish pride. We're here, you know, mm-hmm. we're good people. Some of us are bad people, but we're just the people like everyone else, right?
Yeah.
But then you, October 7th, you're at that festival. You go back to your hotel room and you write...
Bring the family home. Yeah. I booked a session with my boy Kyle and I'm like, let's go. And I was like, me, my boy El Rey, who's my DJ, and some random girl we met there, some Asian girl that was like, she's like, I want to come to the studio. I'm like, let's, we're all like, let's fucking go. And we went, recorded it. Filmed.
Talk about that song.
Anti-Semitism bars, New York City, six races for every point up in my star. First name.
This song,
it's a rap song, a hip hop song about the hostages. And it came out October 13th. So this is like,
yeah. I mean, I could have had it come out quicker, but the video came out on October that day. That's when we got the final video. So I went and recorded it in a studio in LA, and my boy Kyle and Max owned this place. And it's a real deal studio. It's like this big, and you know, it's like a hip hop studio, like a late night session. Got done, and I was leaving from the show where the guy was making all the political statements. I'm like, all right, I'm done. You know, let's go into the studio because I'm just here to get my like achieve my mission, which is like make this song. I make this song. I go back to New York and I change some of the lyrics. But while I was writing in L.A. And it was like, yeah, from Kanye to Amaz, it's all Namaste.
Synagogue to Amaz, pray he'll pain. I march for BLM, I march for Ukraine. But this time, me and my people in the Negev need rain.
Funny enough, I just taken a songwriting class with a girl you probably know. And, you know, somebody that I used to know. It's with Gautier and Kimbra. And Kimbra was teaching the class. And I was in the class every day, paid for it. And then October 7th happened and I could not show back up for class. But something she mentioned was the most important part of a song is the beginning, and you need to have such like powerful lyrics. And the year before I wrote a diss track against Kanye West called Death Con 3. And that, you know, if you think of anti-Semitism bars in New York City, 6 points for every racist in the star. Like it was just 1 year to 1 year. So it was like from Kanye to Amaz, it's all the same. Like, it's just, I've been through every anti-Semitic phase of this. And that really, really, you know, what else did I say?
Roger? I think, you know, it's a strong beginning because it people that are listening in, you know, say, wait, what did he say? Kanye to Hamas. And he was like, so it helped people understand something. But it's not like, we're not there to kill Israelis. We're there to kill Jews. Like, they even say, like, they call their father, like, the Hamas terrorists, and say, I kill 10 Jews, al Yahudi. Like, they don't say I kill 10 Israelis. And by you saying from Kanye
like,
to Hamas,
yeah,
you're basically saying it is all the same. It might have different tactics.
If I showed you my comment section, the horseshoe theory is like the realest thing within my comment section of like videos, from that Kanye thing to the next. And the Kanye video that I dropped had millions and millions of views. And like this was also... This didn't have the original effect to bring the family home. I shot like a video with my boy Andy in LA, and I'm like, this is not up to par. I went, I redid it, and we went into New York and Brooklyn. I rechanged the lyrics, and we went out and shot the music video, and I bought a shofar in like Crown Heights, and I went and I just started like I imagine, like if someone comes up to me in the street while I'm shooting this video, like I'll fucking beat them in the head with the shofar. And like, but like in my mind, I was nervous that that would happen. But I was also like, yo, I wanted to make something in the Lower East Side that makes Jews seem tough. And when you think of tough Jews and gangster Jews, like I brought up in the beginning, you think of like the Lower East Side. You think of dudes that are like, all right, let's go. You're like, you're going to beat some dudes up. And I just shot it. And I was like in front of Jonas Schimmel's and like this old early 1900s place. And I had this discussion today. We focus a lot on like activism and action, but we don't focus a lot on athleticism and strength. And like, I think you build confidence by being strong. Like if you could throw a punch or if you could hit, like if you've been hit, like we come from an era that people don't get beat up anymore. People don't get fights. Like I come from getting my teeth knocked out, my head split open, beat up, surgeries on my ears from wrestling, like just physical contact. But no one's even experienced that. We experienced intimidation and that's it. And I wanted to make something that makes people bang us and be like, yeah. My favorite lyric was Roger Waters, suck my dick for the rest of your life.
Roger Waters, suck my dick for the rest of your life.
And I think,
I don't know if we have to beep that or not.
No, but it's like, but what, yeah, like no. What, like, what are we, who are we lying to?
Yeah.
Like,
no, you're right.
You don't like, come from rap and rappers are like, hey, yo, suck my dick. Like that's what rappers say. Like, and I wanted to drive it home. So if Roger Waters hear it, he would also share it. So now I'm thinking like internet. I'm thinking like Mia Khalifa. Okay.
Yeah.
Cause you know, you're, that's how I felt. It was October 7th when I'm writing the song.
No, you're absolutely right. So, because like we've been spending years being like, Roger Waters, please stop demonizing
me,
us.
Roger Waters, keep demonizing.
And let me tell you're you like this. Coming and saying, no, like we're going after you yes. rather than
and
asking
every
you.
Time I perform the song, every time I perform the song, I have to change the lyrics so it's like suitable for a family
yeah.
thing. And like, listen, but you know what? When you listen to the song and the 40,000 people that have streamed it on Spotify, there's no edit. Right. And whether it's dumb on my part or not, I think it's an overall problem that like we live in a society where we're complaining about people, a terrorist calling up his father saying, I killed 10 Jews. And we're like, we don't want to curse or offend anybody. Yeah. Right. But we want to raise millions of dollars. It's like, that's when I'm like, let's all have a big glass of shut the F up. Okay. Mm. And like learn how to fight. And that's like what my brothers feel the same way. And that's why they just operate in their own divisions and things. And listen, I operate in that world too. I go speak in front of students. I do shows for children and they always ask me like curve it. But in a certain point, this is about how I feel and what I'm putting out. And it doesn't belong to me. It belongs to the world. Now, if you have your own insecurities about foul line, like if I'm ever going to be in an attack or something like this, I'm not going to be like, oh, I don't want to curse. You know what I mean?
I tell my son there's no bad words, there's bad intentions, right? So you can use whatever.
Exactly. And I really appreciate you saying that because it's I meant it in the most refreshing way for people to, you don't even have to say it. You can feel it. And that's like what I wanted people to do. So you feel that song. And then that has gone from me making fun, silly songs, and I make fun, silly songs to deal with my own darkness, right? Because I come from a dark place and a lot of shame and a lot of, you know, depression and all these things from addiction is the reason why I got high in the first place. And I want to take this. And then I directed it to like making songs that were literally about life after 10/7. So I did Bring the Family Home, Ceasefire, with everything that's going on, what's going on. I did Watermelon, Avatiach, which is a big one.
Doom scrolling,
and just
let's break them down because I do want to talk. So you did Bring the Family Home, which was like
that's like the anthem,
amazing, you know, anthem to the hostages, and I can't believe we still have to play this. I hope one day you'll retire that.
That's
song.
That's the point.
That's the hope,
and that became the song of all the videos at the end of all the videos that I was doing.
And then, but then you do a song called Ceasefire, which you recorded not on the Lower East Side, but actually in Washington Square Park, which I call ground zero for Hamas terrorists in New York City, right? Other than Colombia, which is ground one, right? What's Ceasefire? Tell me.
the, if you want to, it's really, I was hoping to like get people obviously from both sides. Oh yeah, ceasefire. Like, let me click on that. It was like, you want a ceasefire, please get the facts of me. It's basically return the hostages and then there will be a ceasefire. I mean, that's the theme of the song. Problems, I'm working on it. Solutions, think I got it. Weapons down and no profit. Okay, release the hostage.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, well, everything will be done. Yes, I do understand that America gives us money and we buy weapons from America and it's a cycle of violence that the entire world participates in except Washington Square Park and Union Square, where people don't walk around, or Times Square, where people don't walk around with military equipment. But like, the entire world does it. And but also there is a conflict, and it's so much bigger than all of our little brains and hearts put together. And sadly to say that, and that's it. Like, we have a societal problem. We don't have a, you know, if society was completely different, guns wouldn't need to be a business, right?
Yeah.
They wouldn't, you know, this is a massive business that we don't have control over.
Right.
So, but that was what that song targeted. And it just wasn't as, you know, the word ceasefire scares Jews, and the word ceasefire also, and it's just misleading for other people, but I think it was a dope song.
It's a dope song because it really tells you, like, you know, yeah, the goal is a ceasefire, but it's not a unilateral, like, you're attacked, now you stop defending yourself, but it's, you're attacked, you achieve your goals to get a ceasefire.
Mm-hmm.
So you did that, and then, super refreshing, a song that I gotta say, like, in my house, like, in my 3-year-old daughter, my 8-year-old son, like, we all know that song, we all love that song, Watermelon.
Yes.
Which was like, you're no longer talking about there, you're talking about here. So
yeah,
tell me about Watermelon. And, you know.
Watermelon's fun. So I recorded it with, shout out to Orr. I mean, and it,
tell people
song,
like, a little bit, because not everyone would know what the reference to Watermelon is.
Watermelon. Okay, so obviously Watermelon is exactly what it is. You know, it's green and red and black and green. These are just colors. Avatiach, avatiach, you know, just about watermelon. Avatiach, and wait, it's in
so
Arabic.
So we would say, like, the color is watermelon. So
it
a
represents
a
Palestinian flag. So people started using watermelons after the 67 war, when essentially a flag for Palestine became illegal. And then it sort of became a sort of symbolism. How it became a symbolism in 2024 is that people assumed that once they started posting Palestinian flags and Israeli flags in comments, people started censoring Palestinian flags, so instead they started writing watermelon emojis. Yeah. And a watermelon emoji was a way to be political without being officially political. That's like me using a blue and a white heart or something, like, on Instagram, instead of being censored on the Israeli flag. So we just put a blue and white. Now, from that, the song concept, just so you know, it's not making fun of Palestinians. It's actually the best thing that could ever happen to them. It's, we give you all the land back. I give you all of Israel. You could have it. It could all be called Palestine. You have to give us the rights to the watermelon emoji back on Instagram. That's the thing.
We want the avatia.
Yeah.
I was looking for a seedless one.
Yeah, right, yeah. Now, also, there's a big misconception that Israelis invented seedless watermelon, which is false. It's Japanese people invented the seedless watermelon. Although seedless watermelon is very popular in Israel, and it's amazing. But of course, like, a lot of stuff is amazing in Israel, right? So, when I was writing that, someone told me that, and I was like, oh yeah, I'm looking for a seedless one. And yeah, the song is basically my experience live from the front line of dating with no sex, looking for a baddie that doesn't go to protests, need a normal bae, you know, real estate selling, live, laugh, love, not a bunch of watermelons. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, the live, laugh, love. Oh, what do? I just drink coffee. I like going to the park or whatever, you know, like, you know, everywhere you go, people have an avatiach in their bio. That's like the thing. And now you look around, hey, avatiach, avatiach, chatzin in the mic, koshidil zinom mashiach. Like, I don't know, it's a tune. You know, tiach is also a way to say watermelon in Arabic, so it's very similar. Hey, at this whole track, if you want the land, give us the watermelon back. Yeah. So I'm like offering you land, give me the watermelon.
Yeah.
And people were like, oh, you're like so racist, you hate the world, koshidil, you're a piece of shit, oh, fuck you. Da, da, da. I'm like, this song slaps.
It does, and I have to tell you, you know, it does, and you know what? You don't argue with success. It's been very successful, but I think, you know,
it's got me uninvited from many universities.
But you're being a little bit too, like, nice, because what you're basically saying in the song is like you're trying to erase our entire identity. You know,
yes,
you give us our identity back. You know, you can take everything, but let us be ourselves. Right, like
at a certain point, we need to cut it out. You need to stop claiming emojis and this is just ridiculous. You literally discovered this the other day, you know? And although there is a history as in this cause. Mm. So, you know what? I'm losing my mind. You're losing my mind. I'm just going to release this song. And, you know, they're dissing Bella Hadid and all the other shit. And it's just, at a certain point, dude, it's ridiculous. So, you know what? I'm also ridiculous because I'm a creative. So, I'm going to make a song about this and spend thousands of dollars on a music video. Like, why not? And that's it. And then we just made a song and to the point where, like, hey, F this all chat, if you want the land, give us the watermelon back. I said, I'll perform it as, hey, F this all chat, hands in the air from the front to the back, because I know certain people will get offended, but I played this for black people. I played this for Puerto Rican people, Israeli people, Palestinian people have heard it. Some people think it's clever. Some people hate it. Some people hate me, but they keep sharing it. But the fact is, who are you to tell me what to make? And it's true. All I do is see an avatiach in the bio. And it's true. People at protests are not having sex, including myself. So it's like, you know what I mean? I'm going to all the protests with you. So it's like,
who knows? Maybe this podcast will change.
Nah, but it's just like everyone needs to
I don't know. I'm not a matchmaker, but if I can get kosher deals laid.
No, I'm fine. No, I'm just, when I was doing it, like, it was just funny. Me and Aura were like, man, this shit's so funny. And people love the song, and he added it to so many and it's great. And his song,
Oh Mashiach, she's great. She's
so she's
funny.
Awesome.
Okay, I want to talk to you about two more songs.
Yeah.
All right. One, Doom Scrolling. What? Tell me about Doom Scrolling. You know, and it, I think a lot of people relate to that.
Doom Scrolling is, we shot the video in Paris during the Olympics.
You were very. I saw you supporting the Israeli team. I think it was
football soccer, team. Football, yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And a bunch of other events. But yeah, so the song, I recorded the song in Canada. I got connected through this clothing label that sends me gear. And the guy's name is Grips. And he was like, yo, let's just make a joint. And I'm like, Doom Scrolling. Who's trolling? I believe it is me. Cause I am the troll too. Like I'm doom scrolling. And then next thing you know, you're a troll. You know, you're like, it's just this thing. It's like, but I always said, people are good inside. Just take a look inside. I shot the video and I just wanted it to be rapping. And I really liked the way I was rapping. I'm just really rapping fast and showing talent and skill and with rhyme schemes. And so it made me proud because one, it was sort of me drifting out of like so much war music, I would say, let's call it war music. And that's it. Doom scrolling. It's where we suffer from this phone. You know, this phone is the poison. My thumbs naturally go like this. And I would start waking up and checking my Instagram and seeing if I'm gaining or losing. And it's like, I'm not in it for that. You know what I mean? Like, this is authentically me. And that's where my addiction, my addictive mentalities come in.
But the reason I want to talk about doom scrolling, because it's called doom scrolling. It's all about the dread that we're feeling. And I'm sorry I'm being too academic about this.
No, but I like it. It's great.
But how do you keep that belief that we're all just good, right? Like, the whole point of the song is like, everything looks bad when you're doom scrolling, but people
are good. I have trolls that follow me. I have, there's these guys that follow me. And they message me all the time like, oh, you didn't say anything about this. You're not going to say anything about that. They tag me and everything. And I literally have full, they're like my friends at this point. I've known them for months. And I don't block them. I don't block them.
We engage in conversation with some crazies.
And that's fine. And I believe that if this person's staying in touch with me and I'm staying in touch with them, like, are they going to, I believe this person is a good person. I look at some of their pictures. It looks like people care about them. And this is what they feel. And this is how I feel. And that's okay. Yeah. And doom scrolling is like, it's not about that though. There's doom scrolling is like, it's just everyone takes that time and you could doom scroll about a war. You could doom scroll about an ex. You could doom scroll about the, you know, seeing dead children, and you could doom scroll about seeing dead soldiers and fights and campuses and fights here and just the worst, you know, it could be anything. And so anyone could identify with the hook. And when you make a song, you know, you're like, people, I don't know. I'm like, people are good inside. Just take a look inside. People are good inside. Just take a look inside. Unless you don't want to. I put it in there. Like, unless you don't want to. Because it's true. Like, some people don't want to change. And you discover yourself through.
You don't want to see that the other side is good. I think a lot of people, both on our side and quote unquote the other side don't want to believe that the other side has some good people in them. And it's hard for people.
It's insane. People are like, wait, so when you see dead babies, you don't want them? No. Like, of course what? Not. And it's so crazy because you're like already over here and you're like, why would anyone think that? But like, no, this is a blanket statement, but I would say a lot of people think I would enjoy this. And I'm like, dude, I do not enjoy that. I don't enjoy one. I'm just specifically not trying to torture myself and look at that all day. And what I talk to my friends and they're like, all I do is see dead babies all day on Instagram. And I'm like, I guess that's something that you could, that's doom scroll. I mean, like, that's what kind of really inspired this song, when you're like there and you're like, I can see the hostages and the hostages and the hostages. And they're like, and the other side would be like, well, I don't even see that, because when you, whatever you click into, this algorithm is pushing you this stuff. And I'm like, but I know this person before this and they were cool. You know, I met so many people that totally flipped, but I'm saying, you know what, if that's the best thing for them to do, mazel tov. Like, if it's better off for you to unfollow me and hate me from a distance, if that, and never talk to me and never have engaged me in conversation, that's the best thing for you. I wish you all the best. I really do. And in fact, I want you to hate me even more, and I'll connect you with other people that hate me, because I have so many. I can put you guys all in a group text. Community. You know what I'm saying? You start your own, I'll give you your own WhatsApp group.
I think
group.
The group texts are limited at 1,000 people. I don't. You'll need multiple. All right. Last song that I want to talk about. It's time for a conversation.
Oh, it's time for a conversation. Yes.
Because you're good at conversations, but what's the story of that song?
Macklemore, who I've known just as long as I've known Nassim, he came out, and I've known Macklemore for a long time, and I was in touch with him during the war. I went down to the DC rally and he was there speaking. And for me to see someone,
which DC rally?
The first one, the March on Palestine, March on DC for Palestine. It was about 300,000 people, they said. Maybe it was 150,000, but you know,
what were you
every
doing
side back? Of I just went down to film videos. This is the second time I was filming, period. Yeah. So I was like, oh, let's just go down to DC and film there. Because we had so far released some videos from Columbia University.
Just to have conversations with people.
Yeah, yeah. So we were, you know, going. That's when I did the interviews and we met those girls. They're like, yeah, you should go back to Yemen. And that's when we started like learning about like, you know, the I guess the knowledge of some of the protesters.
Or lack of knowledge.
Yeah. And I was like, why is somebody who doesn't know anything yet about Palestine, why are they having celebrities come speak up? And, you know, Macklemore, you know, he was like, you've known about it for 3 weeks and they have you as the main speaker. Like, what about all the other knowledgeable people? Like, maybe someone with relatives there in Palestine. Like, that's the first thing I thought. I was like, when I see someone and they usher in a celebrity, I already start questioning things, and I think about it as a parlay play for, you know, the celebrity of where they are in their career, et cetera. And when he made the Heinz Hall song and hearing some of the things in the AIPAC.
Wait, describe that song a little bit so people.
Heinz Hall was, I think it's Hamilton Hall at Columbia University. This is the famous place where the woman asked for humanitarian aid. So and now she's actually teaching there.
She's teaching in Hamilton
in
Hall.
In Hamilton
so they
Hall.
Basically broke the glass, broke into the building, took some custodian hostage for a few hours.
Working. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, they wouldn't let him out for a few hours. Then stayed there for like several days until the police said, okay, enough, you know, came in with the SWAT team and said like, let's get out of here.
That was dedicated to a child that was killed
in
an airstrike, to my not Heinz. And so there's sick, you know, so obviously it's a tragic story. So they renamed it Heinz Hall. So he made it about the college students. And this is a great way to get a bunch of college students to love you. This is genius marketing and he's very, very sharp. And it's a great song. And beat sick, and he put it out, and it just went viral, 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 viral. So just like Bring the Family Home, I said, you know what, dude, I have to make something this. And I know him, and he used to follow me and support some of my songs.
It's a song,
I have
to say, like, if you look at the lyrics of the Macklemore song, like, it's full of like just
generalization,
incorrect stuff, a lot of like demonizing, a lot of dehumanizing.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just, you know, I guarantee there's going to be pictures of Nuteri Carta or like somehow popping up, like we're marching with you. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's just very typical shit that you could literally oversee something and research it in about 6 hours and make like a banger if you're a good songwriter. And so I said, I'm going to make a song. And We kind of made it in the same format he did, and that's it. You know, I just released a song ASAP. It was sort of a response song, and I said, okay, you got 300 million views. I got 300,000. I mean, you know, I expect to get 1% of your, you know, he has millions and millions of followers, but I known him, and he's done shows with Modest Yahoo, and he was going to go to Israel with Nassim to do a show in Israel. And I know he was in touch with Nassim, and we were like, yo, why didn't he hit us up and be like, why can't we have a discussion, the Israeli people that you know in life, like, why don't you just have a chat with us? Even to be like, yo, I'm dropping this thing, or, you know, and that's why I wrote, you know, it's time for a conversation. Like, let's speak. And the thing is, our level would be lifted up a lot, you know, because he has a lot of followers, you know. But
why do you think he didn't reach out? Like, you know, is it money?
I just think this
PR
is the thing.
What is it?
I don't know. It's just the same reason why no one reaches out, even people that we really, really know. You know, I'm not saying I'm his best friend, but, you know, I've known these people for 15 to 20 years. You know what I mean? So when I think about that, and Nassim's known him even longer, when you think about that, you're like, if you give us any airtime, it actually hurts you. Like, if I was on his side, it totally makes sense. You know, why couldn't he uplift? And I know other Palestinian artists that, like, you could be uplifting, but there's like specific things when you start picking and choosing. Like, for me, I'm like, hey man, as somebody who's on the other side, I know all the hot anti-Israel Palestinian artists that are great artists, but that's what they're doing. And I'm like, okay, it's good. I always tell everyone, if I was a Mexican artist, I would probably make I would be all my culture. If I was Palestinian, I'd probably be all my culture, but I'm Israeli, so I'm all in his culture. This is just how I am and built as a person. And that's what that song was. 7 months in, I think we all losing our patience. Leave the echo chamber. It's time for a conversation. That's the last words of the song. But I have something in the line that goes, I shot the music video on my spring tour with Hirsch's nephew, brother, uncle, Jeremiah, black or adopted through the grandmother's side.
And the
drive around the truck.
You call it the encampment tour. You went through campuses, wherever there was like these illegal encampments. You know, you set up and sang outside of that.
We met Hirsch's cousin at Milt's in Chicago, just random. There was this Jewish kosher restaurant, and there was a black family in the back, and I think they recognized me from Wild and Out, and it was Hirsch's cousin.
Hirsch Goldberg Paul.
Yes.
The hostage of it was.
This was
executed.
After they released a video of him, missing his arm. Yeah. And then, we're like, let's do a whole day interview with you and take you around. And we went to DePaul and we shot the music video outside, and this is like, let's shoot a music video for Time for a Conversation. Because when I met him, I said, wow, I just released Time for a Conversation, and a picture of your cousin is the cover photo of it. So it was really by chance that we met his family. And there's one part of the song goes, you mention Heinz, fine, you never mention Hirsch. If you gonna disrespect us, please humanize us first, free Palestine, but you gonna free the hostages first. I'm in the counseling, I'm canceling on TV. My homies outside, they protest against Bibi. My friends died, yeah, they murdered was live stream, and you worry about Ivy Leaguers with bad hygiene. Like that was related to the woman outside of Heinz Hall that's teaching there now. And how that played out now that Hirsch is gone, I contacted Jeremiah, and I was just like, man, I'm like, that dude drove the truck around, and people thought he was just some like hired gun, because people's conceptions of Jews, that there's no Jewish families, that there's no black people that are Jews, that there's no brown people that are Jews, that everyone looks white and is, you know, some colonizer.
You're trying to erase us.
And it's, yeah. And to me, it's like, yo, dude, just give me 5 minutes to talk to. It's not the question that we have a valid point or you don't have a valid point. We're not seen as human. When I say this, like, people don't work with me, not because I'm a bad person or I've done them wrong or I've really screwed them over. And in any of those situations that have ever happened, I try to make them right. But what it is, it's because of Israel. And to operate like that in the music scene or in the industry, the fact that that's coming up, fuck that. Mm. In fact, it's like I said, it's big Jew time. I'm like, I'll put 2 yarmulkes on. Just doesn't make me more religious, but I just do it to make people that are anti, yeah.
Being Jewish in public is a protest.
Yes. So if Macklemore hears this, I'd love to speak with him still. And he should visit the And his people found out. I know his people. And like, I used to go to tons of Macklemore shows. I've Macklemore March. I've known him. And they're good people.
You should check out the Nova Festival.
Should check out the Nova Festival because this is what it's about. If you play music festivals, you should go to the Nova Festival. It's not some scam. Yeah. This is a people that we all know.
It should be required visiting for anyone.
For anyone who wanted to get books on a music festival. Yeah. That would be the sickest shit. If I guarantee you, if you're a new music festival with 5,000 people and says, if you want to get booked at this festival, you have to go visit Nova Festival, you will become a lot bigger music festival. And that's the interest. It's like, we just want people to just acknowledge that we exist, not to be, you don't have to be pro Israel. Like, we don't, just go look at it.
Just like, don't shout out to Scooter. Don't stop being anti-Israel.
Yeah. Yeah. You could just come.
We're not asking you to love us.
You could still be anti-Israel if you want.
All right. So I finished the show with what I like to call the Jewish lightning round, a series of quick questions. No right or wrong answers.
All right.
You say whatever comes to mind.
I love it. I love these games.
You get one pass. I get to decide whether you get it. All right. Rami, Kosher Dills, what is one thing people don't know about you?
One thing that people don't know about me? That I'm running the New York City Marathon, raising money for Holocaust survivors, and this will be my 7th marathon.
Nice. What is one thing people don't know about the Jews?
One thing people don't know about the Jews, that some of us are extremely capable of physical domination in sports and fighting. I think there's a lot of strong Jews out there that need to come forward and say what's up.
What is your favorite curse?
Favorite curse in what, Hebrew or
Hebrew, English, Yiddish, Spanish, whatever you want. Like, you like what from the Kishkis? Like what?
Oh, I don't know. For some reason, it's coming to me. Chararosh.
What?
Chararosh. I'll be like shit. I was always say it when I was younger, even though it didn't make sense. Like shithead.
Chararosh. I've never heard that. And
no, I don't think it is. I just put the two words together.
Chararosh. When was the last time you cried?
Last time I cried was. It was within this past week. It was in this past week, yeah. Mm-hmm.
If you could have any person over for Shabbat.
Wait, hold on.
You want to know?
Oh, I brought back my mother's mandolin from her father from Israel, from Kiryat Ivan. I put it on her bed and I wrote her a card. And I said, what an honor it was to carry your mandolin from when she was 12.
Wait, and that made you cry?
Yeah. Because I just care about my mother's journey. So I
that's amazing.
I took the mandolin from there and then also into Germany and then brought it back. And then, you know.
You're a good kid. You're a good son.
Yeah, got to tune it up. If anyone teaches mandolin lessons, my mom's looking.
hit Kosha up. If you could have any person over for Shabbat dinner from any moment in history, who would that be?
Oh, anyone from history?
Anyone. Or living, someone from now.
The Shabbat. Woman from the liver revolt of 1902, the kosher meat boycott, where they broke windows all in the Lower East Side, and then a police officer accosted a woman, and she said she slapped him with a moist piece of liver. It's true. I learned about it at the Museum of Eldridge. It's a true story. I think it's, but she smacked him with a piece of liver, and they were protesting over the prices of kosher meat.
Yeah.
Yeah, all women, Jewish women.
Yeah, it was it's actually an incredible story of economic justice, but also of Jews fighting back.
Shout out to Jewish women.
What's your favorite Jewish holiday?
Oh, my favorite Jewish holiday is, I want to go with Sukkot. I love the movie Ushpizin, and this year I've been invited to be one of the Ushpizin for the Jewish agency. They're like printing me up, and I'm one of like the special guests with all these other cool guests. But I really like Sukkot because I just love fall. It's like, yeah, we're coming here to where we're recording and I'm like, oh, I feel the fall weather and having the hardest word in Hebrew, the schach, you know, that thing over you. And
it sounds like something stuck in your throat.
And you shake. It's such a flex on Instagram to just be with the lulav at any moment, just anywhere. Just
like a lightsaber.
Yeah, just like, yeah, exactly.
What's your least favorite Jewish holiday?
My least favorite Jewish holiday? Tish B'Av, I guess. I'm just saying that because I don't know. I don't always fast, and I'm just like, you know, you're mourning. It's hard for me to just like go through the day and just be whatever.
When do you feel safest?
When do I feel safest? When I'm around my friends. Yeah, like I had a birthday dinner the other day, and I'm like, this is a nice little squad. It felt good.
When do you feel least safe?
When do I feel the least safe? So when I'm like on the road and it's like after a show and you don't have the hotel booked and you're like acting like you just started doing this and you're like, dude, what are we doing here? Like, don't sleep in your car. Don't, you know what I mean? You're professionals now. You don't got to do that. And I don't like being exposed in the middle of nowhere when you don't have your squad. Like my whole life, I trained to travel, bring everyone with me, my squad, when you go out there. So traveling by yourself is not the most fun. It's fun to have someone with you for along for the ride.
What gives you hope?
What gives me hope? The next thing. It's always like you wake up and the imaginary, you know, that you did all these things and you rapped all these raps and you spoke at all these places. And then one day you get an email and someone sends you this message and says, you know, by the way, my mother met you at a gas station in Topeka, Kansas, and you gave her a sticker and over that, you know. And cool. These are just fun things. And you're like, you know, increasing my social imprint a lot of times and then meeting someone that it really changed them. It was nothing for me, but it really changed them. And yeah.
That's nice.
It's cool to.
What's the first thing that comes to mind when you hear the words Jewish civil rights?
Jewish civil rights. I think of this thing called Spill the Honey. It's an organization I work with in Detroit that connected me with Clarence Jones, the guy who wrote the Martin Luther King speech, first seven paragraphs of it, and he was his lawyer.
I had a dream. Yeah.
I have a dream speech. And Solvay, my collaborative event, Blacks and Jews, Rabbi Heschel marching side by side, you know, from Selma to Montgomery. Selma to Montgomery or Montgomery to Selma? I think Selma to Montgomery.
I don't know.
Okay, just want to put that out there if I got that wrong.
But both of them.
But like Black and Jewish collaboration to me is key. And we've lost the mark on that in some way. So anytime I get to hire and support my Black peers that have given me the opportunity to make a living in hip hop, which is Black culture, I'm extremely grateful to be part of Wild and Out as a Jewish representative on a Black television show that gives the most opportunity to that community. So yeah. When I think civil rights, I think, how do we make it even better in the future? It always needs to be improving relations. You know, it's not just, oh, these became legal. And then, you know, it's a growing world.
Finally, every episode, I urge the listeners to donate to one charity that does good in Israel or across the Jewish diaspora. Where would you want people to donate to this week?
Where should they donate to? And this needs to be an organization?
I mean, they can give you money if you want. You know?
No. I don't want it. Well, there's two things. Is that okay to have two things?
Yeah.
I saw their sweatshirt today, Shuva. It's like this little pop-up cart that's like for soldiers in the South, and they have like this entire, if anyone's gone to volunteer down close to in the South, you'll find, and it's where all the soldiers kind of reconvene and eat meals during the day, and these guys just built it as a place for people during the war. It's called Shuva, and the people that make it are just doing so many great things. And there's these kids, Moshe Shear, does Let's Do Something. They Let's do a lot something. Of cool, yeah. They're making a lot of cool stuff happen. They started something for this guy, David, one of their friends that was killed in Nova. And they're just doing a lot of cool stuff. So shout out to them. And I want to hook them up, a little shout out. They really work hard.
Lizzie Savetsky mentioned them as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, so you're let
good.
Me.
No, no,
me,
that's good. That's good, but, because they deserve it, man. They deserve every, like, they've been doing amazing stuff.
So, but I mean, there's so many. I gotta shout out my boy Value Culture. Value Culture is a Bay Area focus, and it does all Jewish, Black Jewish events, a lot of stuff focused on civil rights. And that's who I do Solvay with, and Adam Swig in the Bay Area. And he's a lot of intriguing, well curated Jewish event, artistic, collaborative through multiple cultures. And it's really hard to do that in a space that isn't all Jewish.
Yeah.
So, you know, you have options. You got Bay Area, Israel,
give to all of
Gaza.
Them.
Yeah, you know,
people should be giving to all of them, as much as they can. Kosha, where can people find you?
KoshaDillsWorld.com. That's the website, especially
Kosha,
for like
KoshaDillsWorld.com.
You can find me on Instagram, Twitter, all that. Everything's KoshaDillz. But if you want to get in contact with me, there's a form on the website for like bookings and all those things. And then, you know, we got a Patreon, Kosher Dills, and I got a text line, too, if you want to just join the text group. It's 732-335-7573. You text it, and you're just part of this little text group I have.
And what do you get in those texts?
I don't know. I'll say hi to you guys sometimes. It's kind of fun. Yeah, it's just like my little community. I'm learning as I go, too. I really don't know how to stay in touch, you know, as much, and it's a little bit overwhelming sometimes, but like, you know, I send new videos. I send demos of songs I'm working on. I also have an Instagram. I have a group. I have a WhatsApp. I have multiple. I'm pretty easy to get in touch with, but I think those are the greatest things I like to promote. And, you know, we just appreciate every share, every like, every telling somebody about me. And obviously the podcast, man, this is really cool what you're doing. And it's good to sit down with people because you probably knew something, but you didn't really know everything, you know? Yeah.
No, of course. That's the whole point of this show. Listen, I don't know where this person is, but I'm pretty sure right now there's a 13-year-old Jewish kid who's just starting to grow a mustache and he's dreaming of being a rapper and all he sees is like non-Jewish rappers. And if he finds you, he'll have that role model of like, hey, I can be a Jewish rapper and I can be strong and I can be proud and nonviolent and all of those things together and I don't have to choose. And just for that, you deserve praise.
Thanks.
So I'm just going to thank you and here I am with Kosher Dills.
Just to the nonviolent thing, it's very sharp to learn how to defend yourself. I encourage wrestling, physical strength. There's a difference between being nonviolent and knowing how to defend yourself and being strong. Yeah. And I think I'm really encouraging me. I'm like on my workout journey and it's amazing to just the level of confidence it brings you when you're outside. And I'm really, like I said, sometimes some people focus on activism, but focus on athleticism too. You know what I mean?
I love it.
We should increase the competition in our two-hand touch Rosh Hashanah football games.
I love that. Well, thank you.
Yeah,
so
dude,
much.
My man. Yes, sir.
Hi, I'm Michael Greenspan, Shai's father-in-law. I'd like to thank you for listening to the Here I Am podcast with Shai Davidai. Here I Am is recorded at The Cave Production House in Hackensack, New Jersey, and is brought to you in partnership with Abby Sophia and Adamit Productions. You can find us on Instagram, YouTube, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts. I'd also like to extend my deepest gratitude to everyone at Adamit Productions for turning Shai's dream into a reality, and to all our donors and partners for their unwavering commitment to fighting for Jewish civil rights. Most importantly, I'd like to thank you, our listeners. Let's be honest, none of this would have been possible without your support and dedication. Showing up is half the battle. Thank you for showing up. Thank you for being there. Thank you for saying, "Here I am."